it just gives you a sense of how immense that iceberg must be.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the reasons I started my site was to identify intervention strategies, techniques that would really help a lot of people that virtually no one understands or recognizes. And the people who do don't really have the skill set to make that widely appreciated. So like, you're the perfect type of person I want to interview, because it's, you really have a powerful, powerful tool and can help so many people, so many people. And the point I wanted to mention when I'm remembering too, and I'm hoping you'll be willing to do this. In the course I took with you, you had a lot of clinical examples, and I think it would be useful to include one with this article. And I can think of a woman, I think it was, she was 19 years old. And I discussed it with you specifically. I was so impressed with the results of that. But it illustrates a number of variables. One is the adept skill at which you specifically navigated her through the process to understand what was precipitating this problem. And the woman was, she was only 19, but she had the wisdom of someone much, much older. She was really, really sharp and figured it out right away, better than almost any of the examples that she had. So if you'd be willing to put that together, you know, the initial assessment that you provide, and then the post, what the miracle that occurred after your intervention. And this was just like so I'm assuming that's okay to do that?
Sure.
Okay, good. That would be really helpful.
So I could give an example of, and because what it's all about is having a conversation.
Yes.
And it's about helping people focus on their breathing experience. It's not about looking at an instrument, or it's not outside in, it's inside out. Mm-hmm. So that's how we refer to it. It's inside out work. I help the person explore themselves from a breathing perspective, you know, and you have to keep very centered in doing, because you can go astray so quickly and easily, you know. Because people, when you talk about breathing, it gets to be very personal, extremely personal. And so we have a form we use. We have a number of different forms, but one form that we have gets a little history that could be relevant to the breathing. And then there's a checklist that we use with symptoms and then physiological changes, whatever you want to call them, deficits, symptoms. Mm-hmm. And then we look at, on that same form, the client that I'm talking with indicates the situations. There's a list of situations. So they indicate the situations in which these symptoms occur. Because, you know, tingling in the fingers can be for a lot of different reasons. It might not be breathing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important that one understands that all those symptoms that I listed previously, there's all kinds of things that can bring on those symptoms, not just breathing.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes important to, you know, understand when they're related to behavior or not. And that comes out in the conversation. So I use that form to interview them. Okay. And I just go all through the form, and I look at, we end up in the first part of the form looking sort of at their history that they describe in some detail. And so they're communicating, they're interacting, and I'm asking them questions and so on. And then we get to the checklist, which is really the key here. When, how often they experience these symptoms, where they experience them, you know, how they respond, how they interpret them, what their own sense of what those symptoms are about, and all of that kind of thing. And we're looking at the CO2 level all of the time, from the very beginning to the end, because the CO2 level will change radically during this time, depending upon the person. And that gives us information as to the triggers for this kind of breathing. Okay. Because I was interviewing, say, this person about a particular thing there. And as soon as we started the interview, her CO2 goes from normal to way down. And I've noticed symptoms on the checklist that maybe she gets dizzy a lot. And when she gets dizzy, she gets frightened. So I see we're talking right now. I see the CO2 level go down. I say, are you feeling dizzy right now? And she says, yeah, as a matter of fact, this is exactly how I feel in these kinds of situations. Well, look at your CO2 level. Look what happened here. And this is called what we call transactional psychophysiology. We're interacting with the person around their physiology, and they're seeing what's happening while they're behaving in the way they are. And so we explore that together. And then we do all kinds of testing together, depending on who the person is and what the issues are. And a good example might be, I'll give you a quick case example, but we'll have them overbreathe on purpose. Now, this isn't as simple as it sounds. There's you need to do it the right way. There's a real right way to do it, and there are wrong ways to do it, where you have someone overventilate, okay, on purpose. And what happens when you do that, they start to get symptoms, and they start to get deficits. And they're there, and they're focusing on their experience. They're not talking. I'm the one who's doing the talking. I'm asking them questions to think about the answers, not to interact with me, but just to think about the answers to the questions. And I'll ask questions like, are there any emotions coming up right now? Are there any memories that are being triggered right now? Does this remind you of anything in your current life circumstances? Does this remind you of something that happened to you in the past? And I have a lot of information before I do this. I have this form, so they're not just random questions. They're really specific. They're about that person and their lives and what we've uncovered together. And then what often happens is that they're very surprised. I mean, it's amazing what you get when you do this. I mean, it's incredible. And then what often happens is that they're trapped. They can't get out. They're breathing that way, and the CO2 level just simply does not come up no matter what they do. And this is what happens in their real life situation.
When they call when they call the ambulance.
Right, they call the ambulance. They're trapped. They can't get out of it, and what the hell is going on? And so on. It's really, really difficult for them. And so we can see that they get trapped, and they realize that they're trapped because they can see the CO2 level. I'm trapped. I still have all these symptoms. And then as I work with them and I use certain kinds of experiential paradigms that I implement so they can raise the CO2 level, and then all the symptoms go away and they're amazed. Like, my God, I can't believe that. They just disappear just like that. Or someone will say something like, when I brought up their level, helped them bring their CO2 level up, they say to me, my God, it seemed like I wasn't even breathing. I mean, I feel so much better, and I was hardly breathing at all. How can that be? It's because their belief system was is they weren't getting enough oxygen, and they couldn't possibly be okay breathing in these very small kinds of breaths. And in fact, this is what allowed the trap to break open, so they could, you know, allow those reflexes to operate, to allow it to trust the system, so they get to where they need to be from a respiratory point of view. And this may all happen in one short session, you know, if you know what you're doing. It's about having a conversation. I could give an example.
Well, let me just interject something while I'm remembering. You have a rescue method available to you when you do these treatments, but you've only had to use it once in your clinical training. And I think it would be helpful to discuss that, because many people watching this will not have the resources or not be motivated enough to seek out the resources we're going to identify in a moment. But it's a good test. And that's the paper bag test. And many people know of it, but you have to implement it properly. You just can't take a big shopping bag, or a plastic bag and do this. So there's specific details, but if you breathe into the bag, you will raise your CO2 levels and many of these symptoms will disappear. And you can use that if you have the symptoms you discussed earlier, the nausea, the vomiting, headaches, tingling in your fingers, and if it disappears, it's CO2. You were overbreathing. So why don't you discuss the strategy?
If it disappears, you know for sure.
Yeah,
that's 100%. What's going on. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You find, like, I remember I was skiing one time in Taos, New Mexico, and I was waiting in line, and it was in a hotel, and the person in front of me was complaining about altitude illness to the hotel clerk. And the hotel clerk said, look, you just need a paper bag and you'll be okay. And I said, my God, this guy doesn't know why he's saying that, but he knows it works. You see, it's not about lack of oxygen. All this, the symptoms that this man was having had nothing to do with the lack of oxygen. It had to do with the fact that he was hypocapnic. And that's why the paper bag works.
Okay, tell us the details, the size of the bag, how you use it, because people
are... First of all, you never want to use a plastic bag. You suffocate. Mm-hmm. Never, ever use anything like that. Always a paper bag.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's too big, it's not going to work. If it's too small, it's not going to work. Okay, and so generally about 15 inches deep and about 6 inches wide is what we recommend.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to think of the centimeters. I know it in centimeters too, but
that's okay. Most people here are using the imperial system, it's not a problem.
But anyway, so it's very important that it be porous. You know, mm-hmm. a paper bag is porous. You know, it's you're not going to suffocate, and you put it over your nose and your mouth, and it brings up the CO2 level up to a certain point, and then it stops there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I could give you numbers, but it wouldn't mean anything to you because you're not, you haven't been trained to know what numbers are the right numbers,
and
so on. But it'll raise the CO2 level substantially. And typically within a very short time, you know, you're okay. I remember a woman that we met in Georgia, in the United States, my partner Sandra and I, and she had this irritable bowel syndrome kind of problem with major anxiety around it, major anxiety. And she owned a bed and breakfast place. And so she wanted some advice because she found out what we did. And I said, well, you know, here's some things you could do. There's not much I could really offer her. But one of them was a paper bag. And about 4 months later, I mean, I have the original email. It really is an amazing email. She wrote back and she said her whole life had completely changed. She no longer had to suffer with these episodes. She hadn't had any for months. And she couldn't believe it. But of course, she was dependent on the bag.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't learning a new habit. She just mm-hmm. grabbed the bag when she needed it, unfortunately.
It's a pretty safe Band-Aid, though.
Right, pretty safe Band-Aid.
Inexpensive.
Very inexpensive. But that was years ago before, you know, the kind of technology we have these days. That's back around 2000
It's a remarkable story. absolutely remarkable. You changed this woman's life in a simple 3 to 5 minute conversation.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
But I could give a simple example of how we do this kind of interviewing. And it's, you know, you probably remember that example of the athlete I talked about who...
Yeah, why don't you share it here? That'd be great.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm going to try to keep any reference to who she mm-hmm. might be out of the picture. But but this was an athlete, a very accomplished athlete. And she had a real breathing problem. A friend of mine wanted me to see her because... My friend said, you know, I think maybe what you're doing can help. She was her best friend. My friend was a woman and her friend was a woman. And so I said, sure, I'll talk to her. And so I had a CO2 device and I went there to my friend's clinic and I saw her friend there. And I asked her, so what's your problem? And she said, well, I miss work constantly because I can't get enough air and I just struggle getting enough air and I have to cancel all my appointments. She's a healthcare provider and I miss 1 or 2 days of work every week. This is terrible. So what have you done? Oh, I've gone and seen various doctors and I've gotten prescriptions that are anti-anxiety. They tell me it's an anxiety issue or a stress issue because I can't find anything wrong with me, but I just can't get my breath. There's so much air hunger. And so on. I said, well, I said to her, well, when does this happen? Can you identify anything about it? And she said, no, I really can't. It happens anytime. I don't know when it's going to happen. And I said, well, you know, you were telling me that you miss a whole day of work. Every time you tell me about this, it's about how you miss a whole day. See, this is the beginning of breathing behavior analysis, okay? And you said, well, you said this happened at the beginning of the day. She said, well, I never really thought about that, she said. I said, well, do you have this problem when you wake up? You wake up in the morning, you can't get enough air. She said, no, I'm fine. She said, and then you eat breakfast? She said, yes, I had breakfast. I said, what about that? She said, well, I'm fine. But then when does the problem occur? She said, well, I guess it's just right after breakfast. I never thought about that. Just after breakfast. So somehow eating, it's so simple, right? Eating had something to do with breathing. No, she never thought of it. No one had ever asked her about it. Nobody. So now I said, and then she said to me, hey, you know, this happens to me sometimes after I have lunch. I said, you know, this seems like there's something to do with eating and breathing. And she said, yeah, that's amazing. I never thought of that. I mean, it's so obvious. So then I said to her, so what do? You eat breakfast, you can't get enough air, you're struggling. What do all day? You just sit around? What do? You read books? What do? She says she practices breathing techniques to get larger breaths, to get more air, to try to get rid of that air hunger. And she has a book that she references about how to do this. And I said, well, does it work? Does it work for you? She says, no. In fact, it gets worse. Of course it gets worse. Okay, so then I said, but she also come in. I had this capnometer there, and she said, well, it's nothing to do with my carbon dioxide, because I had a friend who tested me, and she tested me, and it was all normal. And I said, well, right now it is normal. I'm looking at it right now, and it is normal right now, but that doesn't mean it's normal all the time. She said, oh, really? I said, well, let's see.